Hi, I'm Jorge Luis, and in today's episode, we're going to hear our friend Chris Silver talking a little bit about his experience in Ecuador. Let's start now.
Hopecast. Learning about the life and mission of education equals hope.
Welcome to the Education Equals Hope Hopecast. I'm Jorge Luis Rodriguez, and I am the coordinator of teams and training for Equals H in Ecuador. Equals H exists to provide for the education of those in desperate and difficult situations. And the hope for this podcast is to keep all of our dear listeners, supporters, informed as to what is happening here with our ministry in Ecuador. And we could never do this without you, all of our listeners. Thank you so much for being with us and for everything that you do for us. And today, kind of like a wrap-up with our Suani beautiful and wonderful experience, we have someone very, very, very cool, and I'm super glad that we have you here with us, Chris. You are one of the leaders of this incredible team that we just received in this spring break, but please introduce yourself.
Absolutely. I'm Dr. Christopher Silver. I'm currently an assistant professor at Suwannee, the University of the South. I'm in the Department of Psychology, and my research area is in the field of psychology of religion. However, I also, besides having a doctorate in psychology, I also have a doctorate in learning and leadership. So I both have degrees in education as well as psychology.
That's really cool. I have to say that I'm so thankful to God that we have the opportunity of having different people from different backgrounds, right? But never better said than this time, you know, like what an incredible experience it is that you have. And with those lenses and those filters, we just want to hear, man, what have you seen? But before we go into that, I definitely want to hear what has brought you down here. Like, I know you work at Suwannee.
Yes.
And you and of course, I know that Suwannee has been bringing teams, and they have they take very seriously the side of diversity and culture exploration, I would say.
Absolutely.
But please let me know, how did you find out about this specific experience, and how did you decide to come down here?
Well, I was invited by Lauren Goodpastor at Suwannee to be a part of this, and you know, I was incredibly excited about this opportunity. I've done quite a bit of field research on different kinds of ministry groups and mission work, particularly with underserved populations in society. Did some field work in inner city Atlanta with a Pentecostal ministry down there. The group was called Blood and Fire. I believe it's folded since, working with a sociologist of religion from the University of Akron named Margaret Paloma. Spent about a year and a half embedded in that community. And I've also worked with a number of other kinds of projects like that, both nonprofit and others, but quite a bit of field research studying religion, and looking at it psychologically. So we're using science to understand, religious experience, mysticism, cognition, intergroup dynamics. My research kind of spans the gambit. I'm a highly collaborative kind of professor, so I like to work with a lot of different academics that study these kinds of things. But I also have a really important focus, which is to really try to do research that helps society. That's really important to me. And at Suwannee, in our psych department, we have this mission statement, which is psych for the public good. So doing science to help people. And what better way to really embody those ideals than to come along on this wonderful trip and partner with you all and your wonderful organization?
Wow. Earlier this week, we were able to share with someone what you do. And the way that you synthesized that, I think, was perfect. Because what you said is, I do research for religious psychology.
Yes.
And that was incredible, just like the fact of doing that. And of course, as you know, we try to do all of these different things for people because we believe in being able to help those in desperate and difficult situations.
Absolutely.
But of course, we do have a heart for God and His teachings, and we never impose that to anybody. But coming down from your perspective, I think you will have you have to have noticed many different things about what we do and the way that we do it, right? How has that been? I first want you to talk to us about like that kind of experience, like coming down from that background. What have you perceived as from us as a team of Equals H and our philosophy behind what we do?
Oh, yeah. And let me use a colloquial phrase here. Be prepared to have your hair blown back, right? I don't have hair, so that makes it even funnier. But be prepared to have your hair blown back because there's so much going on, not only just here in Ecuador, but just learning about all the connections and all the ways you're making connections around the world. One of the things that was particularly interesting for me, given my past research and field research with this kind of stuff, is that you all empower the local communities. You give them a voice to make decisions. You're there to support them, but not in that sort of like, I'm coming to tell you what to do kind of way. It's more a matter of like, here we are with resources, but what do you need? Tell us what your values are, what is important to you, and then also where do we need to step aside and empower you all to let you do what you need to do to serve the community. I mean, honestly, if we've been talking all week, but I mean, you could turn this into multiple research projects. I mean, it's just incredible all the ways you're serving these different communities, these at-need communities. But I think the empowerment piece out of everything is probably one of the most fascinating and salient examples of I think some of the good work that you guys are potentially doing. There's something to be said about embedded education, right? So let me set my psychology hat aside. Let me put the education hat on. I think there's something to be said about embedding students in a situation like this where they not only can they see the intersection between religion, culture, and the self. And if you'll bear with me, that's the model I want to start with. And so in many respects, all are intertwined with each other, but there's always tension points, right? So psychologically, sorry, I'm going to put the hat back on for a second, but psychologically, I mean, there's always tension points between I'm now in a new place, but wait, I'm not just in a new place. I'm not a tourist. I'm in a new place and I'm going out and seeing in the communities and meeting the people that are receiving some of these benefits and potential, right? But at the same time, we're also intersecting with the culture side, right? You know, for many of us, including myself, we're not very good at Spanish necessarily or a second language. And so there's also the humbling aspect, which ties back to the individual of like, I need to come in with a humble heart. I need to be incredibly aware of the environment and the people, which is the most important piece of what we all are doing. You guys on the mission side, me on the research side, it's about the people, right? That's exactly what it's about. And so, this three-tiered system is constantly in an ebb and flow. It's constantly shifting. And at the center is the person who's doing this work, you know. So even if you're here for a short term, like a week, 10-day mission like we were, versus you're an intern and you're coming down for a summer, there's this constant ebb and flow that's constantly shifting. And you're having to consistently, as the individual, adjust, constantly adjusting. And of course, the listeners can't see, I'm moving back and forth and shifting my hands around. I think that what this does is, one of the things that we're doing as part with our students right now on this trip is we're actually doing a little bit of research with our students because we want to understand, like, how is this going to potentially transform them? So when they come back to Suwannee and Ecuador's in the rearview mirror, what happens then?
Right.
And that is the most, from my perspective, that's the most important question.
Absolutely.
This is all important, but what happens when we get back?
Yeah.
That's the big, big Q question. Of what's going to go on, with our students, even with myself and the leadership team who came with the students. Yeah. And I can tell you right now, it's funny because you're interviewing me and we're interviewing students right now as part of this research. But for me, this has been incredibly transformative. I've made some incredible friendships here. I've been moved on multiple occasions with our interactions with the communities, your community partners that you have here, and just the genuine kindness and the value, the sort of emotional fidelity that comes from this experience, I think is incredibly important.
That's really cool. And I'm smiling for so many different reasons. but one of them is because I definitely feel so grateful and so proud and also very humbled by the opportunity of doing what we do and seeing that someone like you can see those things. Because if someone has listened before to our podcast, you know that we talk about relationships all the time.
Absolutely.
And we talk about connection all the time. But we also talk about something that you just mentioned, Chris, right now. And it's how powerful it is, the empowering of the ministry sites that we want to have. You know, like we try to let them decide what we are doing. Let them decide how we're going to do it. Let them decide on also what are the dreams that they want to you know, accomplish.
Right.
And we are just those partners that practically and literally have just put their own hands, you know, so that they can step on us and we can just push them so that they can reach whatever they want.
Wonderful analogy. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think that, I mean, there's so much. The problem, I think, with any kind of outreach, be it mission work or even on the secular side of trying to be in an NGO or something along those lines, I think one of the greatest challenges is that, you know, this is always a growth. It's growth in process. You know, organizations, you know, as they begin to provide more and more resources to communities, you begin to sort of diversify the opportunities that exist, not only in a particular locale like Ecuador, but going to other places around the world. There's a lot of growing pains that come, I think, with that.
Absolutely.
And I think that one of the things that I've been really, really happy about to sort of see here is just how absolutely humble and reflective your team has been about this. Very, you know, very frank conversations. You know, I, for all intents and purposes, to y'all, I'm a stranger. I'm just someone who showed up as part of a trip. I mean, okay, yeah, I'm a professor, but I'm still a stranger. And yet, y'all have been so incredibly open and transparent. And to the listeners, transparency is the absolute first stage of knowing if an organization is doing well. Second one that y'all are doing incredibly well is empowering the people you serve to have the voice to make the decisions. I mentioned that I'd done some previous research on this group in inner city Atlanta. And, you know, at the very outset, when I first got there, I was impressed that they were feeding the homeless. And I was incredibly impressed by the way their ministry was trying to serve, but, you know, the homeless and the drug addicted. Within 6 months, I realized that the homeless were there just to really serve the congregation and make them feel good about themselves. None of the members of that congregation had any kind of empowerment or voice to say anything. If they did raise concern, they were considered a troublemaker. And it was interesting, as we were both surveying and interviewing participants at that site, it was incredibly clear that they had to be there because it was the safest place in Atlanta for them. But then at the same time, once they were fed and they were housed, you know, it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Right.
You know, once we start moving up that hierarchy and we start giving people their, you know, they get their basic needs met, then what we, you know, people start reflecting on their experience. Now, if you're hungry, You're hyper-focused on getting food in your belly.
Yeah.
Or if your child is in a dangerous situation, you're hyper-focused on taking care of your child. But once those needs get met, then they have the chance to start reflecting on, okay, now what can I do to bring myself out of this situation?
Yeah.
And y'all are doing it at the next level. You know, some of the previous stuff I've seen in other organizations, I'm not entirely sure. And, you know, I don't want to offend anybody out there and your listeners out there, but it's something to really set and reflect on is, you know, for those of you out there who are in other organizations is, you know, what are we doing to get our folks lifted to the position where, you know, we as the givers step back and we help the community, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very valuable to talk about this. This was actually one of the first topics and kind of like the reason why we started the podcast is because we wanted to share with people how life was down here during the pandemic and when COVID hit, what were we doing? Because many people were like, if schools are closed, what are you guys doing right now? So there were many, many things that we were doing. We realized at some point that our family, sometimes the only regular income that they will have was only the micro scholarship that they will receive from us. Because then the other money that they will receive was for selling something in the streets, from cleaning houses. So those incomes were not regular, were not permanent, you know?
Right.
So the only thing that they have was us and what we said. And I heard Cameron, and between the many things that I've heard Cameron saying that have impacted my heart was, how can we pretend to cover their school needs if they are on an empty stomach?
Exactly.
Right. So I think one of the reasons why we enjoy having teams like you and Swanee, it's because you guys push us to keep on seeing, observing, and getting to know the people that we want to serve to. We are absolutely able, and that is part of my job. My personal role is to go to ministry sites and create, you know, this long life relationships, long lasting relationships. But it is through teams like yours that we are able actually to get into their homes and see even more of what we know about them.
Right.
Because we know many things, but we need to see that experimented on our you know, on skin, so that we can truly get to know how to help. And that is something that you also mentioned in your first comment, Chris. It is a huge pulling and pushing and stretching and tensing, you know, because it requires lots of things from us. And how wonderful is God that he can work into what we are through who we are in order to help us help someone else.
And I mean, honestly, the world's a tricky place right now.
Absolutely.
For all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, nowhere is it very tricky than the United States right now. And so one of the things that, you know, I'm not going to lie, on a personal note, is I've been a little stressed about where the United States has been going in terms of the divisions in politics. You know, people kind of scared right now. You know, it doesn't matter which side of the political line you fall on. People are afraid right now. And so to come here and just see the sort of emotional availability that people have with each other, not to mention the agency. So I'm going to use a psychological term here, but the self-agency that you all are trying to instill in the people that you serve. And serve's probably not even the right word, I think. I think the right word here is to collaborate.
Yes.
I think that's the right word. And you said it earlier. You said relationship. I think sometimes when we use the term serve too, it implies like I'm here to fix something necessarily.
Right.
But you know, it's just like when we were at, you know, at the church, you know, yesterday and 2 days before that, is you got to get embedded. And actually, here's the irony of it. Guess what science says? You know, the field research out there says it literally the same thing. You got to embed. You got to be equals. You got to work together. And yeah, you're going to argue. You might have divisions and debates. But as long as everyone's heart's in the right place, right, the agenda is to better everyone's situation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I do mean everyone. I think that's where the value is.
That's really cool, Chris. In order to kind of like close this episode,
please,
can you please tell me, what are you taking away from what you have seen here?
Full disclosure, I mean, you guys got to get this word out and start modeling this in publications and stuff. And I know y'all have got a number of resources already out there.
Yep.
But, I think there's a real opportunity here, because one of the other things I've been incredibly impressed by as an academic is how much y'all are really trying to understand. I've multiple times when I've sat through conversations with you and your colleagues, presentations, y'all are constantly citing the literature. So as an academic, that just warms my heart, because in a lot of the literature I've read, and I'm like, wow, you guys went and read it. So one of the things I would argue is y'all are trying to sort of balance being emotionally available for these communities, you know, and the inspiration that comes from being emotionally motivated to make change. But then y'all are also being good skeptics. You're carefully thinking through, like, is what we're doing having a real impact? And you're measuring it. You're thinking about it, you know, and you're willing to set back and go, you know what, it was my idea, but it doesn't work. That's been so impressive to me. So, you know, I think that regardless of religious tradition, I think that people can be good human beings. I think the role is that, you know, if it's working through God, or if you're a secular person, if it's working through, I think we can all come together. I think there is community, and I think there's value in that community. Mm-hmm. And if we all can sort of understand the needs of people out there, especially the kinds of people that you're serving. And then at the same time, like my students at Swanee, many of them are going to go on to big jobs and have wonderful careers. But if this plants that seed in their heart, and they can reflect back on this years later, and then they come to the table with you and maybe bring resources, or you know, willing to come back, I think that that just expands the bubble, right? And the bubble, as the bubble grows, the more people get included in the bubble. And then the bubble, that also means a lot of the people who need help get included in the bubble too.
Right.
And so I said this earlier in one of our sessions that we're talking, but I look at this like a beautiful mosaic, like a stained glass window, mm-hmm. right? It takes all the parts to make the beautiful image. And I appreciate y'all for thinking about it, not only the emotion and motivation to serve, mm-hmm. but the value and skepticism of, like, is this working? And do we need to reflect and pivot to fix the issue?
Yeah. There's nothing more dangerous than the arrogance of believing that you're doing things right and that you know it all.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's nothing
more. Oh, trust me, as an academic, I get that entirely. Uh-huh. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So we're, again, super thankful for your presence down here, Chris, and hopefully this is not the last one. And hopefully this experience down here, this short-term experience, is not the last thing that we will do together. Thank you so much for everything, for your heart mainly, and everything that you've done, and for this amazing experience that we have been able to live together. If you would like to be part of the Equals H team, please go to educationequalshope.org and find the Donate Now button. Thanks for making the education of those in desperate and difficult situations just possible. We could never do this without any of your guys' help. And thank you for coming down in teams, for donating for scholarships, for listening to this podcast, and just for being there for us when we have needed it. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you all of our dear listeners. Goodbye and see you next week.
Thank you all again for your time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to our Hopecast. If you want to join the mission or know more about it, please visit our webpage, www.educationequalshope.org, or check our YouTube channel and Instagram with the same name.